Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Francis Brennan, good morning.
How are you, Brendan? Nice to be here.
It feels strange not to say hotelier Francis Brennan, good morning. Have you shrugged that off?
Absolutely.
And moved on?
Yeah. No, not looking back at all, always forward.
Yeah, you're a cool customer. I feel you're mainly in the bedlinen business these days.
Yeah,
well, talk about Francis Brennan, they talk about your sheets.
It's very well. It's doing very well, the sheets, let me tell you, all right? I don't know where all the sheets go, but we sell a lot of sheets, Brendan.
Okay.
Which is good for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And also you're currently filming series 14 of At Your Service, 40. But you've joined us today to reflect on your life through the medium of five songs. And I feel this is going to open up. It's a whole other hidden side to you. You're mad into music.
Mad into music. Well, when you live on your own, you have yourself on the radio. And as life goes on, you just hear everything.
Yeah.
So it could be Britney Spears today, and it could be Diana Ross tomorrow, and then a classical the next day. No problem at all.
And you keep up with the new music?
Yeah, well, I'm not great. Yeah. I'm not hugely up now with Cesar and all of them and CMAT and all that. Because if they had a proper name...
The fact that you're able to say their names.
Well, if they had a proper name, I'd probably know them. But it's not... Well, I did get a bit confused now because we were in Las Vegas for U2 and we had four nights and so we had nights to spare and I decided that I'd book a show and I saw this show available and I booked it and I presumed it was Drake... But it turned out to be Usher. I got confused in that area, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. But you knew your Drake.
I wanted to go see him. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But anyway, when we got there, it was the best night of our lives.
Usher was,
yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. Because I think we were the only four white people in the whole audience and the whole crack around was absolutely brilliant. Did I understand one word he said? No.
No.
But he gave a great concert.
Okay, you were possibly the only person over 40 to be generous.
You're very kind. You're very kind.
So you've decided to keep it Irish with your song choices
because
today.
Because when I got a phone call to say, would you do this? And I said, yeah. And then I was thinking about it. I couldn't cope with the world music. It was just too much to go out there and find five songs that I would like to think. So I said, right, I'll just do an Irish selection.
Narrowed
and that's
down.
What we've done. Yeah, so okay. It narrowed it down way, way.
Okay, so first choice. Is Mishera by Sean O'Reilly. Why this?
Funny one, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, we were COS boys, Christian Brothers, in West Londrow.
Yeah.
And for some reason...
Is that a good experience?
No.
No.
I wasn't going to say that now. They murdered me, all right?
Yeah.
To be quite honest.
Did they? Yeah.
And my brother one time got a slap on the calf and we had a lovely imprint, like a tattoo of the strap, which I know you know the strap, okay?
Yeah.
Yourself. And we were at home playing and this girl across the road, a very good Protestant family, all right? We were only like 8 or 10, I'd say, at the time, all right? Said to Damien, my brother, what is that on your leg? Oh, he says, that's brother so-and-so gave me a wallop. Oh my God, she says, and what school do you go to? And he says, Christian Brothers in Western Row. And she was 8 and she says, they're not very Christian. I thought that, I've often thought of it, brilliant reply to the situation, but it was imprinted on his leg like a tattoo.
Right.
No, they weren't. I went to school every day terrified. I coughed
Did
up.
Did
yeah,
you?
Absolutely. Listen, into the kitchen, have your porridge, have your tea and toast, into the toilet, puke and go to school. That was my morning every time with the Christian Brothers
really?
In Western Road. They were absolutely... I mean, I was trying my best. I never was not a trier, okay? I was never hugely academic, but I was doing my very best. But they just murdered us.
And you're not a person who would be going on about your trauma or be a victim.
Oh, not at all.
But I can see you're kind of upset.
Yeah, no, but when I think about it, I hope that when, please God, when they're doing redress checks, the first one will come to me in Kenmare.
Yeah.
Because I deserve it. No, they were just unfair. It was just impossible.
Does that kind of leave a mark on you in other ways as
I'm
well
not,
then?
I don't think so, because I was very practical. I just got on with it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Puke the porridge the next day and go to school and you're grand. You know, but it is looking back on it, it was absolutely completely. And my mother and father wouldn't, you know, you didn't talk about those things, you just kept it to yourself. You got a wallop in school. I mean, I'd say no day went by that I didn't get a wallop
every day, and you knew that's what you were going into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how does Sean O'Reilly come into it?
Yeah, Sean O'Reilly. Well, I can't actually, I did try and root around to see, but the film was launched in 1959, and I would have been in school. That was my time in West Londrow. And we had a school film day for the launch of the film, which now in those days, a film in school was absolutely so exciting.
Yeah.
And I can remember sitting in the row actually sitting there, okay, and then the music comes on. And I remember the one thing I came out of thinking was, my God, the cymbals were fantastic. The big clash of the cymbals and the music. And it just, I mean, it was only...
And just to explain to people, Mishé Hara was a huge kind of cultural touchstone at the time and since.
Yeah, it was a completely a new approach to classical music by Sean O'Riordan, who comes from Cooley, not too far from me in Kenmare. And he composed it, and it was to commemorate Pierce, because it came from a poem from Padraig Pearse. And it's around that time that he produced it. And it launched his career forever.
Yeah,
as long as he lived, he
and kind
died
of changed,
quite young.
Changed Irish music
absolutely
as well.
Forever. Yeah,
but this is the first time you felt the power. You remember feeling the power of music.
Yeah, I've often thought of it like loads of times since, not just for this incident of it, but I often think, you know, I was lucky to be there at the very start of Mishé Hara, and every time I hear the music, I can remember.
Okay, so here's Francis Brennan's first choice, and I think this is from the opening sequence of Mishé Hara by Sean O'Riordan. Shivers down my spine.
Yeah, and we have no cymbals yet, so it's still to come. Those of you that might want to listen to it again.
And listen, there was a sense of it as well. We're as good as anyone. Our music is as good as anyone.
It's an opening up. It's just a beautiful piece of music. Yeah, absolutely.
Mishé
Hara
by Sean O'Riordan, Francis Brennan's first choice today. So, Francis, I think you were a grafter from an early age. Did you get you got your kind of social skills from your mother? The grafting came from your father,
Yeah, absolutely. Dad was a grocer in Milltown originally, and then in Stepaside. So we were on stage working, lugging boxes, bales of briquettes, bags of potatoes, since we were probably 8 or 9. So I spent a lot of time behind the counter in the shop. And it's a great place to know people, whether they do have a tin of beans on Sunday for their dinner or a roast beef. You can figure out where they're coming and going to, all right?
Yeah.
Socially, I'm talking, all right? But I always enjoyed that. I loved going to shop, and I worked in the shop an awful lot.
And then you kind of started setting up your own businesses. Did you have a babysitting racket at one point?
I had a babysitting racket, I had. I remember one Saturday night, I had 42 people out on babysitting. And I was taking the 10%.
And no insurance.
Not at all. And no doubt about anybody. And nobody got hurt, thanks be to God. And there never was a query. But I did all sorts of things. I sold logs as a younger fella, with red candles in them at Christmas, and robbed red berries from my neighbour because there was no red berries that year in the holly, and put them on the holly with fishing gut, and everybody was thrilled to pay extra for the holly on the log. I had a babysitting service. Then I did all sorts of things. Like I worked in a pub, a Step Inn in Dublin. Okay, it was one of the first kind of what they call a gastro pub today, with great food. I worked there every Friday and Saturday night for years and enjoyed it. I came home at 2 o'clock in the morning from Stepside to Sandyford on the bike, as happy as Larry, after a night's work. And I was very lucky. I have the ability to keep loads of tables happy, even though they're waiting a long time. If you give somebody an old squeeze on the arm and say, "We're coming to you now," they're quite happy then. They know that I'm on top of it as quick as I can be.
Yeah.
So I was a good waiter. It's and I enjoy, and I still enjoy waiting. To this day,
do you,
I often think if the feet were better than they are, I could be the great waiter again.
So being of service to people.
Yeah. I just like that.
So then your second choice is Thin Lizzy, Whiskey in the Jar. Why this?
Well, a couple of reasons. Well, Whiskey in the Jar is because we're going on the Cork and Kerry Mountains, so that kind of makes it near to home, you know what I mean, the line in the song. But we left Western Row CBS, and we then went to COS Leeson Street as a secondary school. All of those schools were on bus lines. That's why we did them, because mum and dad, you just got off the bus and you went into school. So that's why they were picked that way. And my father had gone to COS as a young fella as well. So we were there, and I was on the school council-y thing, you know, the students thing, all right? And somebody on the student thing knew somebody that knew Thin Lizzy, and we used to do dances on a Saturday night. I think it's once a month, it wasn't every week, in the school hall. And between the chickstreets, we were able to book Thin Lizzy. Like, which was fantastic. Like, we had them queuing out the door, right?
Yeah.
I always remember that they had a smoke machine, all right, simple smoke machine, and they had a spotlight that turned round, you know, red, orange, green, whatever, going round and round. And like, my God, all of us thought we were in London in the 70s. It was fantastic.
You see, I'm trying to picture you there, would be like giving Phil in, if you could, afterwards or whatever. And I'm seeing Francis now. I kind of feel you were always middle-aged or something.
I suppose I'm around a long time as middle-aged. That's the problem, I think, all right? No, it was like we just did that and it was great. And, you know, the name Thin Lizzy is terrific. The name Thin Lizzy comes from a dandy comic character called Thin Lizzy, T-H-I-N Lizzy. But the Irish don't say thin as thin, they say tin.
Yeah.
So they called their band Thin Lizzy in deference to Thin Lizzy in the magazine. I thought it was a good way. They were clever to see the Irish drop the H.
So here we go, I'll drop the H. So Francis Brennan, second choice, Thin Lizzy, Whiskey in the Jar. Thin Lizzy there, Whiskey in the Jar, and that's Francis Brennan's second choice today. So Francis, you would have hosted your fair share of rock and rollers in the Park Hotel down the years. Was there a story about the Rolling Stones?
The Rolling Stones, yeah. A bit of legend now, I've told it so many times, but it is interesting. We had the Keith Richards and the other fella staying for like a weekend away, all right? And they went off to bed and they started playing music in the room, and one guest next door up the corridor rang to reception and complained. So he rang the night manager, who was actually gone off duty at that stage, all right? So Ken was his name. He came back over, okay, to deal with the problem. So he goes up and he knocks on the door and there's no action, and he knocks again. And then they said, come in. And he has a pass key. So he opens the door and he goes in, and here, Keith Richards is on the ground, naked as the day he was born, playing the guitar, lying on the ground. Like, so Ken said, I'm sorry, gentlemen, we've had a little complaint about the noise. Can you just tone it down a little? And they said, and then Keith Richards says, is it a complainer that's complaining? Yes, says Ken. There's a person. Well, he says, I'm going to complain the complainer. He was obviously had the answer always available, all right? Anyway, they must have toned it down. But you know, the best thing about it was the next morning they paid the bills for the people all around them, which I thought was a nice thing to do.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah, so that was the way it ended up. Everybody was delighted then.
Or thrilled, I'd say, yeah. And they had a story had to tell.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, for life.
You bought the Park Hotel when you were 24, did you? It's mad when you look back now.
I was listening to a young fellow there on the radio just coming in who sold his company for millions and millions at 23. So I'm not at the races compared to him. But yeah, I did. I bought the Park at 24. Yeah. It all just happened so beautifully. All right. I was working for a company for 4 years. They went bust, not because of the Park Hotel, but because of other things they were involved in. All right. And there was a liquidator appointed. I was in America, came back. I was working in America for the hotel. I came back and I met the liquidator. I said, listen, I'll tell you something. You'll sell a hotel for twice the price if it's open and happy, as against being closed and muffed, I said. Mm. So if you want to do, I'll lease the hotel from you if you'll allow me to do that. And I'll take it ahead, as always. If you, the day you sell it and you want me out, I'll just walk out. Okay. I will not cause trouble. So he said, right, okay. So we did a deal. The rent was high but cheap in reality, okay. So I did that. Then I gave the liquidator back the hotel in October when all the winter costs come in. I had none of them. And then the next year, guess what? He hadn't sold it. So I said, I winked and said, well, you go again. Now, at this stage, I had a considerable sum of money, because in those days, The upkeep was very high in a hotel, and maintenance, you could spend 300,000 or 400,000 a year just doing maintenance on the property, all right, being an old building, all right. So I was spending none of that. I wasn't going to be putting up wallpaper for the next fella. He could do what he liked. But, and if I got a hole in the carpet, I was down to Roach's Doors for a $49.99 little lovely Indian rug to put on top of the hole in the carpet. So I didn't have to replace the whole room. So I was clever in the spending. And then it turned out that he couldn't sell it, and the courts were roaring at him to get rid of it, all right. I went to 13 banks on the South Mall, which you'll know well, wore a different coat every other day, so they wouldn't notice it was the same fella going in and out of the different offices. All of the banks refused me money because I was too young and it was too big a deal. Now, I had a considerable sum of money to put with it. I mean, I should have just taken the money and gone to Mexico and had a great life, because I would still have enough money left over to live in Mexico, I think, at this stage of my life. All right, okay. But I didn't do that. Anyway, at the end of the day, a regular guest at the hotel, a banker in Switzerland, I got in touch with him. Now, of course, there was no internet or... There was telex, I think, at the time. It was as much as you could get for fast conversation. So I flew over to him. He did the deal, and I came back and I bought the hotel. I told nobody. Nothing changed. Everything, all the staff were the same. The hotel was the same and all the rest. The only thing was that I closed in the winter, because we stayed open in the winter prior to. And closing in the winter made the difference between making a profit and surviving for the next year compared to the thing. So, and then
No fear.
Actually, listen, when you're young and silly, it doesn't matter a damn. Yeah. I was quite happy. Now, it was a big thing to put in a seven-figure sum of money that was in the bank for me alone into the deal and go forward. Seven figures So it was a lot of money for a young fella back in 84, 86.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, listen, I never look back. Move on, keep going, and all the rest.
And I suppose we see from that there, you were always kind of an innovator in business and stuff. You've picked two innovators in music as your next choice. Tell me about Paul Brady and Andy Irvine.
Yeah, Paul Brady and Andy Irvine. They're mid-70s CD or LP, whatever. It was LP at the time, all right. It was fantastic. I don't know what it was on it, all right. It was a change from a traditional kind of folk to a more modern approach to folk, and I just thought it was fantastic. And the way they used the guitar, like the highlighting the guitar with the strings, and Andy Irvine then as well. It's just a fantastic piece of music. And you know, they played last year here in Cork, I'm saying, because you're from Cork. In Cork, I tried to get to the door, but I just couldn't manage it because I haven't ever seen them live. But they were playing last year. But the Arthur McBride is just a beautiful song.
So you would be that person who was running out to buy LPs, CDs when they came out. Like, do you have a big collection, yeah?
Yeah, no. Oh, yeah, well, I have over 4,000 CDs, okay, in boxes, because I don't have space in my apartment now for them. But they're there. I keep thinking, what will I do with them someday? But I'll do something one day. And then I would have had 400 first issue records, LP vinyl. But unfortunately, I had a flood in my basement storage room, and they all got completely ruined. They all got stuck together. Now, the records are all perfect, but unfortunately, the sleeves are all in bits.
So how do you listen to music now?
On Spotify.
Do you?
Because it's just the handiest. You know, you can call up anything you want and away you go.
Okay, so here's your third choice. This is Paul Brady and Andy Irvine and their version of Arthur McBride.
Another little quick bit of that. Yeah. I had an uncle back in the Second World War who took the King's shilling, all right? Actually, the First World War it was. Took the King's shilling and went to fight in Europe, all right? And was killed in what is now Germany, okay? And he's buried there. And Damien, my brother, took my mother a good few years ago over, and they walked in the gate.
So it was her brother, was it?
No, her uncle.
Her uncle. Okay.
They walked in the gate. I think it's in Nuremberg, actually. I think that's where the graveyards are. And there's like 10,000 white crosses, you know, the way they do it, which is beautiful. And there's a man on a ride on lawnmower, and they stopped him and said, could you tell us where Cummings, the grave is coming? Oh, he says, follow me. And that man walked up, down, over, back, over, back, over, back, and stopped right at the grave. Wasn't that unbelievable?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
he knew exactly where it was.
Yeah.
And mum brought some, they brought some earth from his father and mother's grave to put on his grave.
Oh, yeah.
So
those white crosses,
well,
as far as the eye can see, but each one of them a person,
yeah.
a young
and
man.
And he knew exactly where to go, the man on the lawnmower. Wasn't that lovely?
Yeah. So you're still living in Kenmare. How many years are you in Kenmare now?
Oh, God, 40, 47, I'd say now.
Yeah, and you live on the grounds of the hotel. Do you,
I know, yeah.
Is that hard to detach? Like,
no, because actually you come out a different gate anyway before you even start. You don't even go near the hotel to get out. So that's kind of thing. No, listen, I have no look back on the hotel. They're changing quite a lot of things, all for the better, because it's more fresh, more new, more exciting. And Brian and his wife Tara, they're a lovely couple, and they're doing a very good job. And it is changing personnel wise, if you know what I mean, because he's not there all the time. All right, where I would be there all the time, so there would be a slight disconnection on the owner being there. But it's a good few of the staff still there. Some have left, and they're doing a lot of work on the hotel, which is all for the better. And the art people say, "Oh, isn't it dreadful?" I don't think it's dreadful. I think it's quite refreshing that he has all modern art now around the place.
Yeah, I called in there for a look when I was down in the area and had a walk around.
Isn't it nice?
And I think it's lovely. Yeah, no disrespect to the previous art or anything, but it's cool. And your next song is Kenmare related, Jimmy McCarthy.
Oh, Jimmy, yeah. Jimmy used to come into the hotel when he'd be in Kenmare. He used to come to the Kenmare in the early years when he'd be a solo singer just himself and a guitar. There was great folk around Kenmare, folk music, so he used to come down. He'd often come into the hotel, we'd often have an old chat and all the rest, okay? I always found him very shy, and I always thought he needed a hug. I don't know whether that's fair or not, but he was that sort of person, nice person, but just a little bit sensitive, yeah. But he writes brilliant music. Absolutely. Well, I think he does anyway, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, people will know him for all the songs that he is known for, like Ride On, No Frontiers, Mary Black's great one, all right. Bright Blue Rose, The Contender, about the boxer, which is a fantastic song if you listen to it properly.
Yeah.
And I just think he does everything really nice. And then, of course, he wrote...
Well, probably because he's sensitive.
Yeah, of course, yeah. No, he's able to do that. And then he wrote I'm Leaving Nadine, you know, the song about Kenmare, which I picked because that's home, and it's a lovely song, and it's nice to mention Jimmy in the thing. I think he lives in Wicklow, I think, now, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. So now the version we have here, he's singing it live in studio here in Radio 1 a few years ago. So this is Francis Brennan's fourth choice, Jimmy McCarthy, As I Left Behind Nadine.
As I leave behind Nadine, it's like purple splashed on green, and my soul is strangely fed through the winding hills ahead. And she plays a melody on wind and streams for me. Won't you remember? Won't you remember, won't you remember me? Won't you remember, won't you remember, won't you remember me? And we wind and climb and fall like the greatest waltz of all, float across the floor.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, now Nadine is the Irish name for Kenmare, in case those that don't get it. Okay, but it's a little nest between the two mountains, Cahagh Mountains in Cork and the McGillicuddy Reeks in Kerry. And we're down in the hollow in the middle. That's why it's Nadine.
Okay. Francis, I have bad news for you. People want you to run for the Auras.
Stop it. I have no notion of running for the Auras or anything like it.
No notion. That's what people say. You've notion now.
I know.
In the manner of the... I think what you need to say is that, well, you know, if the... I would be much too humble to do that, but if the right people came to me and encouraged me, and if there was a desire for people to want me to go, I would have to consider it as a citizen of this country.
I wouldn't be quarter qualified to... apply for the presidentship of Ireland, let me
listen,
tell you.
I don't know if anyone knows what the qualifications are there anymore. That.
Well, after for
you run a good house, like.
Well, after our current president, it'd be it's a high jump, and Mary McAleese and all of them that went before Mary Robinson. Yeah,
absolutely. Well done. When you said after a current president, I got a fright there, but you said all the right things.
Yeah.
Lots of warm texts outside of that. A lot of people actually very taken with what you said about the Christian Brothers and.
But there was a lot of us educated by them, so you know, and they gave us a good education, I have to say. But you know, they had a bad side, unfortunately.
And look, they had their own, stories as well. Francis Brennan's recall of primary school, so sad and emotional. He's so practical and encouraging. I love his musical choices. Someone else says you're one of the most authentic Irish people of your generation. Speak in such a reflective manner. And you paint a graphic image of how the country has progressed and what can be achieved by following your heart. And someone else, at last, someone agrees with me, they were called Tin Lizzie. We danced them in the Temperance Hall, Longford, in the 1970s. Thank you, Francis. That's from Moll out in Ventry. You're off on your travels again soon, I believe.
We're off on, I'm going to America on Wednesday. Yeah, the nephew gave me tickets for the last night of the Eagles in the Sphere in Las Vegas. But he didn't give me the ticket to fly over. But anyway, we won't worry about that.
Okay.
Anyway, we are going, John and his wife and Adam, my nephew, and his girlfriend. But the five of us are going out on, No, we're all going on Thursday. Yeah,
right.
This coming Thursday. Yeah.
And will this be the last time the Eagles are playing?
Well, I don't know. It's their last concert in the Sphere, I think.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure about whether it's their last concert.
So you go to a lot of gigs, do you?
I do. Well, you see, I like music. Over the years now, I've seen Robbie Williams, Diana Ross, Lionel Richie, J Lo, Britney Spears, Usher, my friend. All right, Kenny Rogers, Bette Midler, Robbie Williams, and a lot of those wouldn't be in Ireland. It might have been abroad. I saw them.
Okay,
so I enjoy live concerts very much.
Yeah, this is a whole other side of things. Yeah, and then you go to America, and you've a lot of friends over there as well. You're great at keeping up friendships, aren't you?
People
will say, "Well, doesn't he have the time with no wife or spouse, no children to be looking after?"
And that is absolutely true. People would say that would be correct. But I've been in America 100 times, I suppose, but always flash by friends, like never more than one night. So I'm going back now with 3 or 4 nights with them over the time I'm in America. I'm in Boston, I'm in Dallas, I'm in San Francisco, and I'm in New York.
Is this a whole other phase for you, so where you're not kind of tied down all the
time?
Is the hotel like relentless? It is.
It never stops, the hotel, because if I was sitting here now, there could be a flood. Somebody could have fallen down the stairs. Somebody didn't like their breakfast. It never stops.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And at night, somebody falls out of bed and they have to get an ambulance or whatever might happen. So it never stops. So now, all of a sudden, I just have no responsibility in that area, which is unbelievably great. And I have time. I can go to America, whether I spend 4 weeks there or 6 weeks there, it's my choice. Whereas before, it would never be. It was always back to the hotel.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky to have my health.
You are. You're very lucky that you live this long and you're still fit and healthy to enjoy this part of your life.
I quite agree.
You've chosen U2 as your final track. So you were saying you saw them in the Sphere. Was it good?
Oh, it was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. It was just unbelievable, you know, and they represent the country so well, like at the top of the market. All right, so it was just wonderful. We were very lucky to get there when they were there.
And the reason now, this is again interesting. You've chosen a song from the Joshua Tree, but you're saying one of the reasons in particular you've chosen it is because of the producer.
Yeah, Daniel Lanois. I love the way he produces. I mean, he's produced for all sorts of people over the years, all right? And he's just one of those people that he has a steady hand and he brings the best out of the client he's dealing with at the time and the musicians and all the rest. So I just always like the way he does work.
Yeah, I did not think I'd be sitting here talking to you about the working methods of Daniel Lanois.
Okay. There you are. You never know what's going on in life.
Francis Brennan, thank you so much. So we'll finish now on your final song choice today from the Joshua Tree. This is U2 and With or Without You. Thanks, Francis.
Thanks, Brennan. My hands are tied.